Hello and welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Liam Finn is back with his second album, FOMO, which stands for Fear of Missing Out. The multi-instrumentalist grows from his 2007 hit, I'll Be Lightning, and is about to embark on a nationwide tour. Producer Tom Watts caught up with Liam earlier in the week.
So, fear of missing out, or FOMO, what are or were you worried about missing out on?
Lots of things, really, but in it, you know, it is kind of a tragic term, and you know, but to be honest, I really feel like everyone suffers from a bit of FOMO, especially because there is so much freedom of information. You always know what's going on more than you ever have, you know, around the world and in your hometown, and last night's party is instantly uploaded to Facebook for you to look at what you missed out on and whatnot. But yeah, I think it more so was I'd gone and sort of isolated myself out at the beach last year to write this record, and so I was kind of, you know, getting calls from friends, or then, you know, sometimes speaking to my family and my best friends over in London and stuff, and they'd all be together hanging out and doing things that I had been doing with them in the previous years. And so I guess I sort of, it was that little feeling of, you know, I wasn't feeling sorry for myself, but it was that little feeling of envy or that feeling of FOMO that kind of sparked a bit of the inspiration of the record. And, you know, so it seemed relevant for the headspace of the world, but also just for me at the time. But I don't even know.
And was it the difficult second album?
Yes, it was. I tried not to give in to that whole sort of idea of a difficult follow-up. But I think, you know, in some ways you probably make it difficult for yourself because you've got to have something to fight against and you've got to have something to write about, you know, and I don't think that being really comfortable and really happy is that creative.
No, not at all. You end up writing about kittens and clouds and it's really boring.
Exactly, yeah. And although that might work if I went for the children's market or something, which, you know, that's always something.
The children's dollars, yeah. It's getting younger every
day. The happier
day.
I get. But yeah, no, I was in some ways, I was in the best place I've ever been, you know, for me, like living at the beach and after a really full-on few years of touring and stuff, I was craving, you know, to be back in New Zealand to live for the first time in ages. So I kind of got everything I asked for and was really happy and was, you know, falling in love and everything was going great. But the idea of making a record or the sort of, I don't know, objective kind of sent me into a bit of a state of sort of madness and anxiety, and I think that now in hindsight I can see that was kind of necessary to make a record, but at the time I was kind of like, oh, I can't do this anymore, what's happened, you know, maybe I've got to mess things up to be able to write, and that's exactly what I was doing.
So my initial response to listening to the album was that it's very easy listening. I mean, not easy listening in the more FM kind of sense, but then on a second listen in headphones, it's actually really quite complex. So like Little Words, for example, is very much, it's, you know, like a singer-songwriter song. But then, and dear listener, follow with me if you will, listen to the kind of the drums pulsating in the background, and then you have the little keyboard thing kind of coming in. Little words come sweet from your tongue. Was that level of attention to detail on the production aspects just, was that part of the approach to the album?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, that's something that I've always been interested in. You know, I think songs should be relatable or have an atmosphere that is engaging to begin with. But on top of that, you know, you get to colour it in. And that's the kind of fun part of anything, you know, sort of choosing your palette and choosing the sounds you want to use. And that was something that between me and the guy who produced the record with me, Burke, we kind of had a lot of fun, not over-agonizing any of the sounds, but just kind of trying to make it sound as interesting as possible. And it's important to me to sort of make sounds that you can't necessarily identify what they really are, or that feels like it's the only way to make some, you know, new music these days, is as long as the songs are still there and you're not, you know, subverting them just for the sake of making interesting sounds. I think that's where you really show your personality and stuff, is through the way you colour it in.
So it actually was a kind of a two-step process where you'd actually write kind of acoustic songs for the most part and then kind of take them into the studio and mess them up with soundy things?
Almost the complete opposite, actually.
Yeah.
Like we're quite often, the songs that Burke gravitated towards that I'd written were not the kind of overthought, finished songs. He liked the little ideas I had, or even if I had a sound that, you know, or it just started with an atmosphere, and we wrote to the atmosphere, and that was kind of what, for me, was the point of difference and a new angle to take on a record, because I think I'll Be Lightning was sort of written more out of songs I'd sat down and written start to finish, and then I had a very clear idea in my head as to what I wanted to create, whereas if I had have tackled this record the same way, I don't think it would have been as good as my last one, and so I needed to have a point of difference. And so yeah, I think atmosphere was a really big thing for me. I wanted to create, I think atmosphere is the most immediate thing in music, and it doesn't get much acknowledgement really. There's always the beat and the melody that people talk about as the first thing you hear, but I think there's an instantaneous reaction to an atmosphere that will make you either listen to it again or never listen to it with any interest, so that was important.
So this was a Liam Finn classic where you played all of the instruments on the album, yeah?
Yeah, classic Liam.
Do you ever find yourself, like, I mean, how do you actually, I don't know, keep a sense of perspective when you're playing everything?
I guess that's why I needed to get a producer in for this one, because I did lose perspective, and I was doing demos and I was doing recordings completely on my own like last time, and it wasn't inspiring me, and I couldn't figure out what was good and what wasn't. So bringing someone else in, I got to actually be completely free of any sort of inhibition and play as wildly as I want and as many times I wanted, and he kept tabs on things and kind of found the most inspired parts, not to me but to him. So it's kind of nice to hear things through someone else's ears and kind of, you know, trust someone else to steer the ship a bit.
Mm. And now you are actually playing live with the band, that's right?
Yes.
Right. Is that a little bit weird? I mean, because you've been writing all of these guitar parts and all of these kind of things, and now you have other people playing them. I mean, you watch them with an eagle eye going, don't mess this up.
No, I mean, for me, I think live is, it's always been a different beast. You know, I want the important elements to be there, and I will always bring up if someone's not playing it how I want it. But to be honest, I kind of like it when you involve some other personalities on a song, and each show's got to be different, each show's got to breathe and live in its own right, so... And having other people involved actually just gives it that element of danger that I've always wanted to find live, and that element of spontaneity. So I think it was the only way to move forward for me live, is to introduce other people around what I was already doing as a kind of one-man band, and try and keep the unique aspect, but have an extra human aspect that I can't control.
Mm. And speaking of playing live, you are going to be touring the country.
Yes, I'm coming back in a month or so, playing around New Zealand in August. And yeah, I can't wait, actually. I love homecoming shows.
And two quick questions before we finish. One is that my flatmate wanted to know what happened to your very bushy beard. What happened to that?
It's shrunk. It's just, you know, I needed a point of difference like the music, and I wasn't prepared to get rid of the beard, but I also, you know, have a girlfriend to think of, and I don't want her getting mouthfuls of beard hair when we patch.
Why would you be having mouthfuls of beard hair?
Because we make out all the time.
But does she suck on your beard?
Well, she does when it's really bushy.
Right, okay, that's good to know. And the other question is, when I got a copy of the album, I got a bio, which is relatively normal, and a pair of socks. Why socks? I mean,
it kind of seemed relatively logical, since my song's called Cold Feet, and it's winter time, it's entering into winter, and I want to make sure that everyone stays healthy and warm and listens to my record in comfort.
And we'll listen to that track, Cold Feet, now. I saw you in the street, left me in a state of wondering if you even noticed me, acting like a nervous teen. I got you on demand.
And that was Liam Finn with a great track from his new album, Fear of Missing Out, FOMO. And that's all we've got time for this week. Thanks very much for listening. If there's something you missed or you'd like to hear again, pop along to our podcast, publicaddress.net/radio. Until next week, I've been Damien Christie.
And I've been Simon Pound.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air.